Okay, so next up will be Paola Grandi to talk about exploring the FR1 and FR2 radio dichotomy with the Kirby satellite.
Thank you. I'm going to discuss the last result on misaligned AGN collected with the Fermi satellite. You have already seen several times this slide showing the gamma ray sky in 1 year and 2 years of survey. Most of these sources are blazar. This is not surprising because we know that because of relativistic effects, the flux, the jet flux is increasing by probabilistic effect due to this dimming factor. However, there is a small part of light detection that not be considered laser. These are a broad class with different characteristics. There is a lot of sources with different characteristics in these classes. There are Starburst galaxy, misaligned AGN, and unaligned supernova. So this class collects sources in which the particle accelerator is different. For example, in Starburst galaxy, we have the acceleration of particles due to a supernova ejecta. In the narrow line supernova in the line, the accelerator is the black hole. So this is the state of art after 24 months of survey. These are the blazar. And these are the non-blazar objects, increasing the exposure time of the light. We can feel this region of the plot, mean that we are observing the sources with low gamma ray. So in my talk, I discussed misaligned AGN in particular, a subclass of the 3% of non-blazar objects. From the radio point of view, misaligned AGN are essentially FR1 radio galaxy, FR2 radio galaxy, and Steve Stefan radio blazar. From the optical point of view, the classification are more complex, and Eleonora Torelli after me will discuss this classification based on the optical line. So, look at this plot, you can see that the blazar just cover this part of the beaming view entangled plot, and misaligned AGN are both sources. Okay, this is the first sample of misaligned AGN that we collected in a month. These sources are characterized by low flux, and generally they are quite steep. The most important thing that you can understand just looking at this table is that most of these sources are FR1. I mean that there is the indication in the first sample that the lab cannot observe FR2 radio galaxy. So the first question that we have to answer is, are we really missing FR2 radio galaxy? And the answer is yes, why? In order to answer this question, I collect the data from this catalog, radio catalog, Tracy and Molongo catalog, in order to cover all the hemisphere, northern and southern. And in this histogram, you can see the red tower and blue tower. The red tower are the objects in the catalog, divided for the cluster, and the blue towers are just the detection. How many of these sources be detected by the lab? And you can see that in this catalog we have a huge amount of FR2, but we could detect only 2 emissions in 2 years. So this is more or less the summary of the plot that I showed before. This is the detection rate for each class of object, and you see immediately the FR2 are extremely heavy object. The VLACAs can be detected very easily, and the Starburst. So, we can say that actually it's true that the last satellite missed a lot of FR2 radio galaxy. So, the problem is why? maybe because they are too far and so they are not bright enough to be detected, or there is some other reason. In order to answer that, we did a sort of straight simple exercise. We plot all the data of the misalign of the data called we plot the sources of the radio cover detected in the lab in this plot. We plot the gamma flux as a function of the bigger flux, and we found a correlation, two kinds of correlation. One correlation using all the objects, I mean, like already present, the LAC and so on, and just using the misalign HEM. The correlation means this is strong in both the case, and you can see here the probability. So using this correlation, we can predict that using the core flux, the radio core flux that is known, we can predict the gamma ray flux expected for this source. And this is a result obtained just using this correlation based on the misalign in each end. So the dashed histogram are the expected sources, the solid are the observed sources. And again, you see that we should expect to see a lot of FRQ based on the luminosity of the radio core, sorry, the flux of the radio core, because this light histogram is just a predicted sources, predicted flux, and here is the sources that are being detected, really detected. We obtain the same result just using the other correlation. Again, we have a lot of sources, FRQ radio galaxies that can overcome the lab threshold sensitivity, but we can also again see very few number of efforts. So we can, if we believe this exercise, we can say that the radio flux indicates that the core of FR2 is bright enough to be visible also at very high energy. This does not occur. So we suggest several at least two interpretations. The first one is based on the study of FR1 radio galaxy. This is a work done by Giulio Migliori. In this plot, you can see the set of NGC 6251. This is a part FR1. She used a simple synchrotron set model, and the fit is pretty good. These are the parameters. They are more or less in agreement with the parameters that we obtained for VLAC, but you can see here that the bulk motion, the Lorentz factor is small. That means that in this case we are seeing a slow jet. This result has also implications for the unified models, because if you keep all these parameters fixed and just change the inclination angle, decrease the inclination angle, keeping this Lorentz factor, we cannot reproduce the typical PLAC fluxes. So in order to overcome this problem, several models are proposed in literature, and Berkcher yesterday did a nice review about that. We can see here the jet proposed by Ghisellini et Tavecchio based on a spine and a slower layer. This is the decelerating jet, and also there is the shock jet in which we suppose that shell of plasma can glide in the jet. All these models have a point in common. They relax the idea that the emitting zone is homogeneous and assume that the jet is very complex with different regions at different velocities. So using the spine layer model, Julia can reproduce pretty well the set of NGC 6251. These are the two Lorentz factors required to reproduce the data, and you see that in this case we have the spine layer, and sorry, the layer and the spine. So in this case we are also we are still in agreement with the unified model. Okay, the idea is that this model can work with FR1, but and maybe this is the reason because we do not see anything. We cannot see FR2 in the gamma ray sky. In fact, if we suppose that in the FR2 are completely dominated by the spine, or are not decelerating, we lost most of this emission that is important for gamma ray pregnancy, and so we can explain the difficulty between FR1 or FR2. There is another possibility suggested by Derner in 1995. In this paper, he explained that the emission, the external emission, is more beamed and the open angle is narrower than in the case of the single concept proton model. So we know, and Eleonora will discuss this that FR2 are rich in seed photons because there is broad line region, accretion disk, narrow line torus. And so probably the external mechanism is more active in FR2. In FR1, probably the synchrotron self-complement is enough. So this can be another interpretation of the paucity of the FR2 in the gamma ray sky. So the last question that I would like to address here is where the gamma ray are originating in a radio galaxy. We know that comparing to the blazar in radio galaxy distribution is a problem. Because we can have the emission from a standing region, like this beautiful work on the lab collaboration show. This is the lobe, these are the lobe, the radio lobes observed in the gamma ray. So we have a standing structure that can produce gamma ray. But we also indication, I am talking about everyone here. Yeah? We have also indication that the gamma ray emission can come from very compact sources, as shown from this light curve. In particular, this light curve on the left shows that there is variability on time scale of days. At the moment, we don't know anything about FR2. But last summer, I went to this meeting in Barcelona, and I had the opportunity to know this work on used by the Boston team, and in this they show that using the light curve and cross correlation along the curves, it is possible to find to localize the region in which the gamma ray are produced. So I go back home and try to do this work with the Visaline AGN, but you can see that it's very difficult to do that because these are light curves of gamma ray. And you see that because of the low statistic, it's difficult to define if the sources is very or not. But there is one case. This is VC111. This is the only FR2 radio galaxy in the middle line sample with broad line. So this is a work from the same team in Boston. This is a paper from Chatterjee. In this plot, paper, they show this light curve, the radio optical ending day, and they suggest, and you can see in this time interval, there is a strong increase of millimeter optical and X-ray, and they suggest that this corresponds to a strong modification of the radio emission, in particular to an ejection of a block. Okay, I'm finished. So, my task was just to add this light curve. This is the light curve of the gamma of the 3C111, and you can see that we can detect the 3C111 at the GV energy only in this field before the ejection of the blob. So I think that this blob is quite convincing that gamma ray, X-ray, optical are related. Here is the, this is the region, in this, look at this region, this time interval, and look at this picture. These are the modification of the core during this time interval. This is August, just here, and then there is November, this is 10, and December. So you can see that there is an ejection of the blob as the development suggest. So in the same work, they say that the ejection is due to the emission of not in from the stationary shock that is located about 0.6 parsecs from the black hole. So that means that the gamma ray emission in aperture radio galaxy, this is the only aperture radio galaxy in which we have this observation, this result, is located in the broadline region.
Okay, these are my conclusions.
So, 90% of the sources in the lab are, lasers. There is a small part of this source, it's very tiny, but very fast in my opinion, that are not the laser, they are with the line AGN, and also there is a Stardust galaxy. One of the problems we had to face was the paucity of FR2, and we first tried to demonstrate that FR2 are really missed by the Fermi satellite. Then using this relation between radio and gamma, we tried to detect to produce the expected gamma ray emission for each radio galaxy, and we confirmed that actually the FR2 radio galaxy should have there is an implication, there is an assumption that I have not said before. When we use the correlation, I assume that the emission, the gamma ray processes is the same in FR1 and FR2. So if this is true, I can convert the radio emission in gamma ray emission. And the number of FR2 expected is very huge. But this is not the case because we conserve only a small number of FR1. So the idea is that the jet is different. FR2 probably is not so decelerated, maybe there is not so strong spine layer around the spine, and there is another possibility related to the mechanism of gamma ray emission, that is just as a thermal component for FR2, a synchrotron set component for FR1. I present here the first identification of the gamma ray sources in one FR2 radio galaxy, thanks to work done before by the Boston groups.
Oh, finished. You mean this sort?
In the gamma ray analysis, did you try all sorts of different integration timescales?
Yes.
And it was only the 3 months that where you got it.
Yeah, this is the best one. It's difficult to have the right. You can have the different, some difference is different. But I think that this is the show is the best one.
Yes, it's a typical source because it's not that far from the black plane.
Yes. We have a similar result for the second quantity, but it's more difficult to explain because there is not so clear correlation with the other band.
At the end of the next section, we have a brief
just to, I mean, you know, there are things like you can take Baltimore here, you can, St. Michael's, which is not far away, and maps are available at the desk, and we can get them for you. If you go down, there's a very famous maritime museum, and the, you know, you can still do a cruise from there. I understand that the cruise boats aren't closed, so if it's cold, you won't actually freeze. For people who are brave enough, I think kayaking is still available. And then there is this waterfall festival, which began today. That's in a place called Easton. So you basically drive back to St. Michael's and keep going on the same road. And I'm told that you can't miss it. It's like there. And that's supposed to be quite fun. So yeah, do come and talk to one of the four of us if you need any further information. We'll try and help you. Please. Have a